Yes, and kia ora everybody. Good evening. Hope you're doing well. It's good to see you. I'm in Auckland tonight and I am getting ready to go and see my lawyer tomorrow to talk about the appeal and what we've got coming up. Now, you know what? I've got to be honest. I am really dedicated, not so much talking about this appeal that we're doing, but more so talking about why we protested. I think that's the really important issue, don't you? I mean, sure, you know, the appeal is important, no doubt about it. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that if we didn't need to protest, we wouldn't have protest. If you think about it, who wants to protest? Who wants to protest? I don't want to protest. I've never been a protest activist in my life. It's the last thing that I would have expected myself to be doing at almost 51 years of age. It just doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me that at my age, I've been involved in this. But why have I been involved in it? It's because we've needed it. We've needed to do that because we've been watching our country go to hell in a handbag, in a multicolored, rainbow-colored, transgender-colored handbag. It's the only way you can describe it. And look, don't get me wrong, I've got nothing really in terms of bigotry or hatred towards people in those communities. I don't. But what I'm over is being force-fed the agenda. We've got to always remember this is less than probably 1% of our country's population are in these communities, and even less again in the rainbow community that are in the trans community. And then even it goes distills down further than that of people who don't want to impose their sexual preferences and lifestyles on the rest of us, especially children. Now, I want to say that Resist Gender Education website that I shared with you last week, what a great website, but I want to remind you that there are rainbow community people involved in that because they don't want to see children sexualized, groomed, and prepared for pedophilia, minor attracted persons and all that rubbish. They don't want to see that. They don't want to see the acceptance medical castration of children, puberty blockers and all that. And don't forget, this has been done at times in a covert environment, so the parents don't know about it. So we are going to have a look at some of these issues tonight, and I think you're going to be horrified, but it's just so that we can be vigilant, protect our babies, because that's all I'm interested in. And, you know, and hey, at the end of the day, if your kid at the age of 18 wants to go from being Henry to Henrietta, that's their decision. But until that time period, they're your babies and you're answerable for them to God. And so we've all got a job to do to protect our babies. Now, some of the issues I'm going to be looking at tonight are mixed and varied. We're going to be looking at the act of deception I've called it. I thought that was quite clever, my little homily, if you like, that I put up earlier today. What was it? Something like, I'm going to have a look at it. I've kind of forgotten. But it was based on ACT, National, Labor and Greens all signing a pact not to speak to anyone out the front of Parliament during the protest. Now, you know, it's all very, very well that Winston comes flying out and making out he's the guy on the big white steed riding into town to rescue everybody. But you know what? I'm sorry, I don't believe him. I just don't believe him. I'm going to say it again. I don't believe him. I'm sorry, I don't believe him. And it's quite funny, really, in some respects, because I've just remembered, you know, is it an act of deception we are seeing rolling out on a national basis of a plan of tyranny that we all labour under that would make Nazis and communists green with envy? It was something like that. You know, I thought it was quite clever at the time when I posted that this afternoon. But it's not funny. It's serious. And where was Te Pāti Māori, Kawhia? You know, where were they? They could have gone out and spoken to the protesters, but why didn't they? Why didn't they? Where are these tenoranga, teratanga, mana motuhake, independence, espousers of personal and Māori sovereignty, etc., where were they? They were nowhere to be seen, unfortunately. But why is that? We're going to look at that as well tonight. We're going to look at some concepts around that as to why that could be the case, and also the police conduct around Parliament. We're going to look at some of the articles that I wanted to cover last week as well. But before we get into it, I do have a little bit of housework to do with you. And but before I get there, though, I do want to say, did you enjoy the interview that I had with Dale Bigtree the other day? Did you enjoy it? I thought it was pretty awesome. What a neat guy. And he's a big supporter, and I'm going to be doing some other stuff with him as well. And he's got a huge audience, massive audience, and it's because he's been at it a long, long time. He's been going to protests and standing up for parents and all sorts of things for a long time. So it's quite an honour to be working with him. And I will be with Dr. Rashid Buttar on his show in the next couple of days as well. So I'll give you the details as soon as I get them. Okay, don't forget also this week, this Thursday, God willing, I will be on the Major Dicol Health and Your Wellbeing show with Sister Caroline Mansfield. And we've got a really good show ahead of you this week, I tell you, because we kind of haven't had the opportunity to really stretch our wings and deliver this show properly. So we're going to do our best for you this week to do that. And also, please don't forget that we've got our petition that's going. Please, please, please support it and get it out there. And I tell you what, we have been getting lots of people signed from all around the world, and of course from our own country here. And it's really important because, you know, as Dale Bigtree was saying the other day during our interview, is that if they can do this to someone like me, you know, let's not forget, I'll turn my camera on to emphasize the point here, let's not forget that at the moment they are letting people that have sexually abused children, that have killed and murdered people, that have been involved in drive-by shootings, they're giving them home detention. We led a very tiny, tiny protest on day one of a national lockdown for one case of COVID. They now know that COVID is the same as the flu. They know that. And how do we know that? Because epidemiologists, including this government one from Otago University the other day, on stuff.com, the main media shill for the New Zealand government, did this entire article about what? That it's time for New Zealand just to completely move on, change the game, change the movie over, because that COVID-19 is basically the equivalent of the flu for most of New Zealand. And isn't that what we said? Excuse me. And it's nice to be vindicated by an epidemiologist from the same university as that insane nut job, Michael Baker. And he's insane. If he had his way, every man, woman, and baby and child in New Zealand would be wearing a mask to go and go in the shower, to the toilet, having your breakfast, you name it. He'd have everybody locked up. But why is that, I wonder? Why is that, I wonder? I don't know. Could it have to do with some of the funding that goes his way from certain individuals, maybe? I don't know. I'm just planting a seed. But anyway, Peter McIntyre comes out and he says, look, it's time to move on. This is like the flu for most of New Zealand. But isn't that what I was saying in 2020? Isn't that what Professor Simon Thornley was saying in February 2020? And John Ioannidis from Stanford University? Isn't that what they were saying? Yes, it was exactly what we were all saying. And we were just nut jobs. And now it's out there. Lockdowns didn't work. They weren't designed to work. They were a guesstimate, and the guesstimate killed thousands of people. All right, so now we are heading up towards 10,000 signatures now. This is the Justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood petition on change.org. Now, I just want to remind everybody, please, do not donate on this website. They've got a donate button, but it doesn't go to us. It goes to them. It's a I got it's a bit of a scam, if I may say so. Excuse me, but it's a good vehicle for which to do this petition. So please support it. If you'd like to support and help me with my donations to pay my legal fees, then this is the email to contact me with, and I can certainly use the support as well, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Yes, the River of Lies, the New Zealand Scamdemic, it's coming, guys. And don't worry, I'm like a little kid myself. I'm like a little kid that can't wait. I'm impatient as well. Don't worry about that. I am. I'm really impatient. I want to get this out. We've got about 3 episodes that we're going to have, because we don't want to waste all the great data that we've got. We are completely up to date. Don't worry your heads about that. Someone asked me today, oh, is it going to be up to date? You bet your bottom dollar it's going to be up to date. And but we are going to get one good chance to get this right, so we better get it right and do it right once. Okay. And if you do want to donate to me, this is the account to do it as well, for your koha. And if you want to support me in the work that I'm doing, even coming down for this meeting tomorrow with my lawyer is going to, you know, it's $1,000. And I don't think I need to say any more on that anyway. I don't want to seem like a grifter. This is my job, after all, playing this game for everybody out there, so that we know what the heck is going on with our beautiful country, that we all know what to do about it, what we can do about it on a personal level, a spiritual level, and an educative level as well. So thank you so much. My family, my whānau who are just here in my motel room, we appreciate it very, very much. Okay, guys, I'm going to hook into it, because we've got a bit to talk about tonight. Well, the art of deception. The art of deception. I'm going to bring this up here. Here we go. Now, this is this declaration that everybody's firing around the place. And look at this declaration. There will be no dialogue with protesters currently occupying the parliamentary precinct and surrounding areas until the protest returns to one within the law. Hold on a second. It's bad already, isn't it? Because within the law, i.e., in fact, let's take another step back from that step, and why don't we look at the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act 1990, which guarantees the right for New Zealanders to peaceful protest any day of the week. Any day of the week. So protest returns to one within the law, including the clearing of an illegally parked vehicle, of all illegally parked vehicles that are blocking streets, the removal of unauthorised structures, and the cessation of the intimidation of Wellingtonians. We note that there is a history of parliamentarians attending peaceful protests or hearing from the leaders of groups who are at Parliament peacefully. What? I'll read that bit again. We note that there is a history of parliamentarians attending peaceful protests or hearing from the leaders of groups who are at the Parliament peacefully. What a load of absolute tripe. That's the best word I can think of right now. What a bunch of slop that you'd feed to your pigs, honestly. No surprise we got Jacinda Ardern there. Then you got Christopher Luxon. Now, I listened to an interview with Christopher Luxon, and I'm gonna talk about that in a second. I listened to him today live speaking on Talkback Radio. Then you've got ACT Party, and boy, is it an act. Is it an act or what? David Seymour. I'm sorry, he's a weasel. Then you got James Shaw. Yeah, sure, mate. She'll be right. From the Green Party. And this is disgusting. And isn't it funny how when you talk about protests, what about the Black Lives Matter protest the year before ours, where I got arrested with Vinny and Debbie and Carl? And what about that one? What about that one that had 10,000 people at it during level 2? No one wearing a mask. No one wearing any PPE gear, PPSE gear, whatever they call it. No one social distancing. Two protests during lockdown, one in Auckland, 10,000, one in Wellington, 10,000 plus. And who goes out to see them? Who goes out to see them? James Shaw, doesn't he? Gives them all of the best of the best encouragement. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because the ideology sits well. Because these people that go with Black Lives Matter, they occupy the left, don't they? Aren't they meant to be the Antifa and anti-fascist types that are actually part of the group that supports the fascists? That's inversion of the highest order. And James Shaw was there, and at the time you had that, you know, you had Jacinda Ardern and Grant Robertson, they issued a statement saying, well, you know, it's everybody's right in New Zealand to protest. Oh yeah, Black Lives Matter, the same that would support climate change, the LGBTQ transgender agenda. Oh yeah, if you're on the right side of the political spectrum, you can breach all day long and you are fine. But James Shaw comes out and he speaks to the criminal crowd of 10,000 who weren't social distancing, wearing masks or safety gear. Not one arrest. No, not one. And you've got these people here signing this declaration that they weren't going to speak to anybody. Now, Cahill, the guy that's the president of the police association, to his absolute credit, has come out and said that they should have gone out, that there were plenty of good people to speak to and that needed to be heard. Good on them. Good on you, mate. And he was speaking and, you know, saying that they should have. And you know what? They should have. But you know what the other problem was? The so-called leaders down in the freedom movement, they didn't have their act together. They didn't present themselves well. The so-called demand document that they typed up to give to Parliament was so inappropriate, it wasn't even funny. And it was mincemeat. It was an absolute, you know, cat and dog's breakfast down there in terms of the leaders that should have had something to present to Parliament that demanded that they came out in the right way and to have negotiation, whether they went in and had or found a neutral ground where they could meet. It could have all happened, but it was just not managed the right way. And I'll tell you where it got to. It got so desperate, even for the police and the parliament to actually find a way to talk, that they got in touch with the Waka Meninga Māori government, and I got involved with that, and we were going to go down and have a sneaky meeting with them to see if we could find out the best way forward. Now, At the time, I communicated with Andrew Costa and said that I wanted to come down. And basically, it was just like, I don't even think at that time I got a very quick reply, but it was a no reply, even though I got a reply, if you know what I mean. But the point is this, you know, you've got these four parties that we are meant to believe are there to serve the people of New Zealand. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Because I don't. I don't believe any one of these parties that I'm looking at right now, including the Pāti Māori, including New Zealand First, and let's face it, including most of the minor parties, don't even know what's going on in the deepest core sense of the problems that we're dealing with. But look at this declaration. It's a travesty. It is a disgusting indictment on the state of politics in New Zealand, and I'm so ashamed of it. I'm so desperately ashamed. Now, I was listening to an interview today with Christopher Luxon. He was out doing his gardening in Rushton and breathlessly took the phone call and was talking to Tim Beveridge, who's an absolute idiot, fellow musician, but he's woke. He would have every man, woman and child vaccinated, this foolish tenor or whatever he is. He's not a tenor. He's not even a oneer. He's a minus fiver. Tenor being a voice, of course, because he's a male singer. But anyway, so the whole point of Christopher Luxon's interview today was for Chris Luxon to make out that he's there for the farmers, to make out that he's that National is the traditional ally of the farmers of New Zealand. They're the ones that understand the ockers of New Zealand, the farming community. They're the farming community political party. But you know what stood out about this guy as you were speaking is how dishonest he really is. Because he's trying to say, well, you know, we need regulations, we need rules. Oh yeah, okay. And then on the other side of his face he's going, you know, it's too much red tape, too much retake. National will get in and we're going to do this and we're going to promise you this and we're going to do that. And then on the other side of his face, he's saying, but we've got to have rules and we've got to have regulations. And it's not about the rules or the regulations. It's how you implement them. What a load of rubbish. What a load of doublespeak. I'm sorry. I'd love to believe the man. Because some of the things he says makes perfect sense. He's no dum-dum. He's a very clever guy, Christopher Luxon. Make no bones about it. He's much smarter than probably any of the Labour MPs. In fact, there are a lot of smart people in National. If you look at the brain capacity of National, it would be way, way, way past Labour. Pick any one of them. It'll be of Labour's MPs and put them against their counterparts in National. They're going to lose. I really believe that. Don't get me wrong, I don't like any party, any of these parties. But if you were to put them up against each other, I don't think Labour would do very, very well at all. Let alone having... It's going to be fun watching Chris Hipkins debate Luxon, because Chris Hipkins may be the media trained long-term politician, but Chris Luxon is a lot sharper and smarter and quicker on his feet than Christopher Hipkins. No doubt about that, dear friends. So does National offer anything different? No, I don't think they do. Because if Christopher Christopher Luxon, getting my Chris's mixed up, Christopher Luxon said, you know what, we're going to help all those family-owned farms, all those farmer-owned farms, we're going to help them. We're going to get rid of all of the compliance regulatory red tape. We're going to find out what should stay, what doesn't need to stay. We're going to get rid of all that. We're going to reduce the cost of business. We're going to get rid of this rubbish carbon trading emission scheme tax that's killing businesses, and all the demands which is reflected in the regulatory requirements that these farmers need to meet. Don't forget that farmers right now are spending 30% of their time at least on compliance and regulation requirement paperwork. And not only that, having to pay for staff to help with the paperwork, administrators, etc. These are family-owned farms trying to make a living. They don't have parliamentary services typing up for them. They've got to pay for it themselves. So this is not a good thing. And he didn't say we're going to get rid of this, we're going to get rid of that, and we're going to actually work with the businesses to make them thrive and be vibrant. No, he didn't say that. He said we need the rules, we need the regulations. It's how you do it. It's how you do it that makes a difference. No, Chris. No, Christopher Luxon. It's not. You take out the stuff that cripples business, that de-incentivizes business owners and operators. You get rid of it, because at the moment, we've got farms all over New Zealand being sold for carbon forests, pine trees, because the farmers can no longer handle it, let alone the mental health problems that we have within the farming community in New Zealand, one of the highest, if not the highest, suicide group in our country. And that's saying for a lot, because a lot of New Zealanders are killing themselves out there because of the lockdown measures that destroyed lives, because of the COVID response, the climate change requirements and demands, and hey presto, you've got New Zealanders in distress killing themselves. Well, you know, Mr. Luxon, I want to say, if you came out and dealt with it like that, I think you might be believed. But until you do that, I just think you're another politician, mate. And we don't need another one of them, that's for sure. So I don't think we need to worry about talking about it any longer, because, you know, boy, I tell you what. Now, here's a little bit of a passing article. And this is a passing article. What's the joke? Go woke, be broke. Look at this. Look at this. Several hundred jobs to go at University of Otago as student numbers plunge. But why are they plunging? Let's just read the first couple of lines here. Several hundred staff will lose their jobs at the University of Otago after falling student numbers means it needs to slash around $60 million from its budget. So applications for voluntary redundancies open on Monday and close on June 2nd, staff were told after 2 p.m. on Thursday. Both academic and backroom roles are on the chopping block, though what subjects and areas will be affected is yet to be determined. A further round of redundancies is expected to follow, with several hundred roles expected to be affected, the university said. Well, I hope Michael Baker is one of the first to find his neck on the chopping board there. But anyway, point is, you go woke, you go broke. And that's what Otago University is. They are a shocker. But why is this happening? Why are the numbers of kids dropping out of tertiary? It's because of what we've just been through for the last 3 years. That's the primary reason behind it, I believe. You had a whole bunch of kids get put off even trying to go to university because they didn't want to take the jabs. You got a whole bunch of kids, some almost at the end of their studying, that were getting ready to pass out to finish their studies, that were told the ultimatum, get the jab or get out, and they chose to get out. That's what happened. And what does that do? That sends a shockwave and a message to all of the kids in New Zealand saying, well, you know, spend all this time and money getting to university, you know, on a 3-year program, maybe a 5-year program. What am I going to do if 2 years into it, they decide that they want to inject us all again and I don't want to be injected? So of course kids are going to think, no, I'm not going to do that. Therefore, kids think to themselves, what have I got to live for? What have I got to go to? What's the point in trying? But isn't that the point? Isn't that the point? So that people are demotivated? I've got a sneaky suspicion that it probably is the point, because what will happen? It means that that kids, you know, will be very easy social credit, universal basic income targets, won't they? I think so. All right, what about this article here? Now, the fear of exodus of New Zealand workers to Australia after citizenship change. Why the heck would you stay in New Zealand? Why would you stay here? Why? Why would you stay here? I don't know why anymore myself. I really don't. Listen to this. Australia's decision to make it easier for Kiwis to become citizens could open the floodgates to more New Zealand workers leaving the country, worsening skill shortages here, experts say. And you know what? This is what was spoken about during this article interview with Christopher Luxon today. He said, you know, Anthony Albanese was a very, very clever man. you don't have to be too clever to work that out. And he said, because they've got an absolute shortage of decent labour and skilled people over in Australia. So what have they done? They've gone and invited New Zealanders to become citizens on a much easier pathway now. And so what have they done? They're only 2.5-3 hours away from New Zealand. He's gone and created himself a neighbour, labour and talent market on his back doorstep. He's beaten New Zealand to the punch. He's beaten us badly to the punch. Anthony Albanese has made New Zealand look foolish. Our nurses, our treasured nurses and medical staff, our treasured teachers, educationalists, all those that got mandated, because mandates are over with now in Australia. And what's going to happen? Everybody's going to flee there. And I don't blame Kiwis for doing it. And so what will that mean? That means when they open up the border here properly, and they might get a few dozen people a year now come to New Zealand. New Zealand's reputation's in tatters. And at least Christopher Luxon said that today. He said, well, you know, why would anyone want to stay here? We've got to make it compelling. We've got to make it competitive for people to stay here. But at the moment, it's not like that. But this is the thing. Christopher Luxon can say that, make out this is a labour problem. But until he comes in and out with a message that says, you know what, we're going to make New Zealand a place for New Zealand and the world to want to come to New Zealand. We're going to make New Zealand a place for New Zealanders won't want to leave, and everybody will want to come in again, like it used to be, right? And how are we going to do that? We're going to turn New Zealand into a paradise for New Zealanders. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to pull out of all these international treaties and programs. We're going to get rid of the UN. We're going to get rid of the WHO. We're going to turn off the UN Agenda 2030 program, just like that. We're going to stop the climate change tyranny. We're going to stop the emissions trading scheme. We're going to make a commitment to all of the principles of environmental pristine culture. We're going to make a commitment to meet the standards required of those outputs, but we're going to do it our way and without paying carbon costs and fees that, I don't know where that money goes. Where does it go? Does it go to the UN? Does it go to Al Gore's, one of Al Gore's many carbon trading companies? Is that where it goes? Because I tell you what, it's a big black pit where New Zealand carbon emissions money goes to. Now, that brings me to back to farming, because he was talking about the, you know, stopping foreign investment into farms so that foreign companies cannot come in and buy big farming blocks and turn them into pine trees for carbon credits. Well, I'm sorry, Christopher, that's called a free and open market. Now, if you want to go Nazi Germany or communist Russia, then you can say, no, you're not going to do that. But it's if it's an open market, it has to stay like that. If a farmer with 300 acres who's had a gutsful of paying tax and regulation requirements to the government and can't keep the council happening, goes and pays $500,000 on one type of water system to 3 years later, the council changes the rules again and has to go and update it again. It's going to cost them another couple hundred thousand dollars. That's what I've heard all over New Zealand in 2020 when I was on the election campaign. So until these people come out and deal with all that, then it's just all the same. And what you're going to get, again, is, you know, is families like this saying, you know, new Kiwis, new Australian Kiwis optimistic for those who follow. Look at that. I've got plenty of cousins over in Australia. I do. And they love it. Some haven't been back for I don't know how long. New Australian Kiwis optimistic for those who follows. There was another article I read of a Māori family that relocated to Perth, which is a huge Māori community there. Couldn't believe it. It was massive. And new Australian, you know, these guys are saying, well, this is just the best thing. You know, it's just the best thing. And they love it. These Aussies, these, well, if they were Māori, I could call them Mozzies, but these Australian Kiwis, they love it there. Why do they love it there? Because they're rewarded for effort. That's why they love it. All right, now let's go into talking about our children, and let's have a look at all that just for a second. Now, I have got a paper, an article that I do want to cover with you, but it's not so much an article, it's actually a document. It's about the UN's position now on wanting countries to literally decriminalize pedophilia. There's no, they call it something else, right? But it's a pedophilia program, if you like, or treaties of some kind of something with some neat name. But what it boils down to is pedophilia, right? Minor attracted persons is the new name of the game. And what do you think goes along with that? What do you think goes along with that? Well, I can tell you what goes along with it, and that's when you get places like Disney, which is well known for having inappropriate cartoons in their cartoons. We know that, you know, I mean, Walt Disney himself was a high degree Freemason. That's point number one. Now, I'm not going to go so far to say he was a pedophile, but I tell you what, there are some very, 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 very strange things in Disney cartoons going back decades ago, you know, that were subliminal sexualization of items for kids, right? And so what are they doing here? Oh, well, of course, Disneyland will hold its first gay parade events. Why is that? Why do kids need to do that? Why is that? All right, let's have a listen to this, guys, because most of the time DeSantis says good stuff. Let's have a look. Thank you. All right, so there you have it. So Disneyland will hold its first official gay parade, gay pride events. But why? Why do kids need this? Why do kids need it? Look, the fact is this. If you got kids that may have that natural thing in them, then, you know, one thing they shouldn't be is bigoted against or harmed or mistreated, anything like that. But what is this about? What is this about? Is this about pushing an ideology? You know, what is it about? Okay. And then what is that? You know, you've got Disney pushing it. And then in the article in stuff.com, you've got them talking about this guy here, former children's entertainer guilty of indecent acts. And it talks about this man, Matthew Clayton, don't know who he is, down in Porirua. And basically, he did three charges of indecent acts on a child. And gets in front of the judge, and the judge looks at him. And basically, the assaults Clayton had inflicted came with severe psychological damage for the victims, plural. One of whom he had assaulted more than 20 times during a period of 8 years. While Clayton had expressed remorse, he denied abusing the third child and was currently at a moderate, listen to this, moderate to high risk of further sexual offending against children until he had completed additional treatment. Listen to this. Fitzgerald argued for a starting point of 3.5 years imprisonment, although he acknowledged a 25% discount on Clayton's sentencing was appropriate due to his early plea. Barrister Peter Rossi, Clayton was remorseful for his actions and requested a starting point of 3 years imprisonment and home detention. Clayton felt serious remorse after his offending had come to light. Oh yeah. So once he got caught out, he was really sorry about it. The judge said the statements written by the family of the victims had been incredibly powerful to hear. All right, let's get it down to here. The judge said 3.5 years imprisonment was an appropriate starting point for Clayton due to the aggravating factors, but listen to this, but gave him credit for his early guilty plea and good character and remorse. Good character? Good character? Good grief. Clayton was sentenced to 12 months home detention, starting immediately. So there you go. Now, I didn't mean to come out with, but how is it that this guy that molests and abuses several children starts off with 3.5 years in jail and ends up with 12 months detention? And yet, for our charges, so-called, for me and Vinny, the starting point was 6 months prison or a fine. And we get 5 months and 4 months, with a month taken off for me for my good character and the 19 days I spent under house arrest. Boy, I tell you what. But the point is, I want to make is this. You know, this man, if you can call him that, is caught abusing these children. And basically, it's considered a misdemeanor. And these little kids will one day grow into teenagers and will eventually grow into being adults. What is it going to do to them? What is it going to do to them? Isn't that a good question? Well, I know what it does. I do. It makes them highly sexualized adults who become promiscuous. That's what it does. Have a look at this. This is from a friend of mine who sent this to me from the United Kingdom, Sister Caroline Mansfield. This here should make it very, very clear to us here in New Zealand where this is going. This is a new TV channel. Now, have a listen to this closely and watch the footage. This is a new TV program that's going on mainstream TV in the United Kingdom. It's called Naked Education. Have a look at this.
There have definitely been times I've looked in the mirror and hated what I see.
This is a baby step.
Right, hold on, let's see what's happened here.
To becoming more accepting of who you are.
Be naked is not.
All right, I'm going to start that again, guys. I'm just having a funny time with this, trying to get this sitting right in the screen here. And for some reason...
Bad thing at all.
Zero!
All right.
Oh, please.
This is weird. something strange going here. I'm trying to get all the shot in here and get it sitting in the right way, but you might have to bear with me because it looks like it's jumped ahead. And
I think it's time that we see what real male
Listen
bodies
to this.
Look like.
What? So what you're going to see now, essentially, is these little girls sitting in the classroom, and now they're going to have men of all ages undress in front of them and show them their naked bodies. Then you're going to see transgender people doing it. You're going to see LGBTQ people doing it, and strange individuals in between.
Oh, naked men.
Do you know what? Your happiness shouldn't be reliant on whether you have this perfect shape.
A groundbreaking new series, Naked Education, starts Tuesday at 8 on Channel 4. All episodes available after on All 4.
Right, I'm going to start that again so you can really get your head around it. Here we go. Have a look at it. Look at that little girl there. Look at that little girl. I can't believe. This is mainstream United Kingdom programming right here. I'll tell you what, let's here we go.
As teenagers, you're always thinking, I'm so fat.
There have definitely been times that I've looked in the mirror and hated what I see.
This is a baby step to becoming more accepting of who you are.
Being naked is not a bad thing at all.
Zero, please. Educate!
I think it's time that we see what real male bodies look like.
Whoa.
Naked men.
Do you know what? Your happiness shouldn't be reliant on whether you have this perfect shape.
A groundbreaking new series, Naked Education, starts Tuesday at 8 on Channel 4. All episodes available after on All 4.
So that's Naked Education. That's going to go live, as you see, very, very soon in the United Kingdom. And I tell you what, there should be protests out in the streets right now in the UK against this. Look, I'm not a prude. I wasn't raised to be a prude and all that. But what I mean, look at this little girl's face here. Look. And who are the parents that allowed these young girls to go on this blinking thing? What's happened to the world? It's gone insane. But what about this one? This is from Washington State. And I think you're going to start to see a program here. Washington passes bill allowing whereabouts of children to be hidden from parents who don't consent to gender transition surgeries. Washington State Senator Marco Lias, you'd have fun with that name if you want to be cheeky, but anyway, Marco Lias announced on Twitter, I'll start that again, announced on Twitter that his state Senate passed SB 5599, a bill that would give the state government the power to take children away from their parents if the parents do not consent to the child's gender transition surgery in early March. At that point, the bill was headed to the House. It just passed the House and is now headed back to the Senate for consideration of the changes made. So there you go. Isn't that just only a few steps beyond what we've got now in New Zealand? Isn't it? Where your school counsellor can put your child on pathway to get abortions, sexual health, gender affirmation treatment, all of that. Isn't it? It's not that far, really, is it? It's not that far away from that. So we are seeing an absolute onslaught against our children. Now, this is going to make you vomit. My wife sent me this late last night. I got it on my messenger. This is from Countdown. Look at this. This is Countdown, folks. Countdown. Now, what is this saying? Let's see if I can make that a bit bigger for us all. Oh, that worked. Very good. Now, this is what you're going to see at a Countdown supermarket store. Help support the Rainbow Youth and round up at the checkout today. Now, I'm all for helping kids that are having gender and sexual dysphoria. Absolutely. Loving them, helping them, and just keeping them safe, keeping them on a pathway so that they can grow up to be whatever they're going to choose to be later on. But the moment you try and get inside their heads and stuff them up forever, then it's going to be hard ever for them to get back to some sort of sense of self, to grow into their own skin and fill out that skin however way it's going to be. But no, you've now got adults have got to intervene into the kid lives of these children and stuff them right up. And guess what? Countdown's going to help fund that. Your donation will help Rainbow Youth provide support services for, listen to this, for queer, gender diverse and intersex young people in Aotearoa. Intersex? There's no such thing as intersex. Gender diverse? Yeah, you're either male or female. And this is Countdown. So wherever kids turn today, they are being hammered. They are being sexualized, the poor things. And it's an absolute shocker. Now, I'm going to play a couple of articles for you. Now, I'm going to play this for you. We looked at this last week, but the reason why I'm going to play it is to make a point here and contrast something for you. Have a look at this. This is my mate Matt Walsh. Have a look. I love his style. I do. I think he's straight up. Let's have a listen.
So what? What is a woman?
Why do you ask that question?
I just really like to know.
What do you think the answer to that question is?
Well, I'm asking. That's why I came to a college professor, this is what you do.
What other kinds of answers have you gotten?
A lot of like this, where you're not answering, and I've gotten a lot of that. So
I think it's interesting that you say that some of the people you've interviewed have been reluctant to answer it, and I think that has a lot to do with the questions that preceded it and the way that you've conducted yourself in the interview.
How have I conducted myself?
How do you think you've conducted yourself?
You just really don't want to answer the questions, do you?
I came today very willing and enthusiastic about answering questions about women's and gender sexuality studies, which is what I do.
You wanted to answer questions about women's studies, and so shouldn't the first answer you should be able to provide is what exactly is a woman?
Well, for me, it's actually a really simple answer, and that's a person who identifies as a woman.
But what are they identifying as?
As a woman.
But what is that?
As a woman.
Do you know what a circular definition is?
I do.
It's sort of like what you're doing right now, where a woman is a woman.
Mm-hmm. Because you're seeking what we would call in my field of work an essentialist definition of gender. I think it sounds like you would like me to give you a set of biological or cultural characteristics that are associated with one gender or the other.
I'm not seeking any type of definition. I'm just seeking a definition.
Yeah, and I gave you...
A woman has...
All right, so you see what's happened here. You see what's happened here. Matt Walsh says to this college professor who's meant to specialise in women's studies and all these types of nifty areas of conversation. And he's trying to get around answering a question that's pretty straightforward, especially for someone who's meant to specialise in these topics, right? But what does that remind you of? What is it and who does it remind you of? So you've got someone clearly part of the LGBTQ community here. He's obviously gay, he's homosexual, and he's doing these he's involved in studies around these topics. And when Matt confronts him and says, you know, what is a woman, he won't answer. He can't answer that. It's beyond his ken of understanding. It's beyond his grasp to want to condescend and give Matt what he's looking for. Oh, you just want an essentialist interpretation, whatever. You just want a essentialist interpretation, right? And yet Matt's just saying, well, just give me a definition. But the guy's not having a bar of it because he can't. He can't play the game. You see, and that's why the trans community get violent, because when you actually strip it right down to the bare bones of this type of question, then they're exposed. They're fully exposed, and there's nothing they can do about it. But what is exposed is a dishonest lie, a dishonest ideology, a dishonest agenda, and one that's really disturbing a lot of poor kids. Look, if kids have got a some sort of natural persuasion to wear pink frocks when they're a boy and all that, right, then let the kid grow up in some sort of way that is natural for him. Don't try and help him by going and buying him the latest summer range of girls' clothes on special or anything like that. Like when I was a little boy, I had a stepbrother, and as far as I can remember, they were making that little boy into a little girl. They were buying him teacup sets and, you know, all those sorts of things, and dollies and all that sort of stuff. And they raised him from an infant. They raised him to be that way. And shock horror, guess what? He's gay today. Is that conditioning of a... Did that child have a real chance of growing up to be whatever he was going to be? Now, fair enough, if he had grown up natural and suddenly decided that... That he's homosexual or whatever, he's choosing that lifestyle. But do you think he had any type of chance to experience or choose the other side? I don't believe so. I don't believe so at all. I don't believe so. But you just see this University College professor say, no, I'm not going to tell you what a woman is. And it's because he's dishonest and he's on an agenda. Well, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this man?
Sean. I just wanted to ask you, given comments by Keir Starmer in Britain, how do you and how does this government define a woman?
Wowee. That was cute. Wowee, look at that. Man, okay. Let's try and get that back, guys. Let's see if I'm back. I'm going to go back to here. And that was weird. That was very, very, very strange. My apologies for that. That's never, and you know what? That's never, ever, ever happened before. Ever happened before. That has never, ever happened before where I have ended up losing everything. That is really, really, really strange. I'm sorry, I'm just going to come back to get my bits and pieces lined up here, guys. My apologies, I don't know what happened there whatsoever, other than to tell you that was really blinking strange, wasn't it? Anyway, let's get back on our horse and let's keep riding. Right, so what we were saying is, of course, going back, we have the college professor, now we've got the Prime Minister of New Zealand having a hard time with that question, and boy, that was really super strange. By the way, that was really super strange. Let's have a look at this again. So here he is getting asked again. Remember the college professor? He looked like he was struck by lightning or blinded by the headlights of a Mack truck that's just about to knock him over. And this is the Prime Minister of New Zealand. Let's see if they kind of look similar, shall we?
Given comments by Keir Starmer in Britain, how do you and how does this government define a woman?
To be honest, Sean, that...
Now, is it me, or am I being unkind, but does he look like he's absolutely struck by lightning himself, or that he's in the middle of the road and he's thinking, oh my gosh, I've just been asked, what is a woman, and now I have to come up with something. What the heck am I going to come up with? And he does exactly what these other people are doing. Let's let him go.
That question's come slightly out of left field for me.
Here he is.
Biology, sex, gender. people define themselves, people define their own genders.
Aha. So he goes back into the fallback position of that college professor. Did you notice that? Let's keep him going.
Keir Starmer has said that he believes 99.9% of women do not have penises. And I know it's a strange thing for him to say, but given recent events in New Zealand, I'd ask again, how do you define what a woman is?
Well, as I've just indicated, I wasn't expecting that question, so it's not something that I've, pre-formulated an answer on. But
pre-formulated an answer? You need to have a pre-formulated answer? Who are you working for, Chris Hipkins?
In terms of gender identity, I think people define their gender identity for themselves.
So that's the best that we've got. That's our New Zealand Prime Minister. But what would Christopher Hipkins say in the same spot? Now, don't forget, Christopher Hipkins is meant to be the leader of a conservative centre-right political party. That's what he's meant to be. He's meant to be the leader of a centre-right political party. But you know what? I think if Christopher Hipkins got asked this, I think Christopher Luxon should be asked that as well, don't you? I do. I think absolutely he should. But before we move on to the next topic, I'm going to let Megyn Kelly have the last word as a woman. Let's see what she has to say.
Within myself personally, Paul, I started off being like, I understand, I have empathy for you, I will use your pronouns of choice. You know, I'm not going to say you're a woman, but you're a trans woman. And now I am realizing that all of those things are gateway drugs to the co-opting of female sports and the word female and the word woman and breastfeeding and childbearing and menstruation, all the things that are under solidly the list of what is a woman. And I'm really done. I'm done. There is no such thing as somebody who's born a biological man who is secretly a woman. Who can become a woman. At best, you are a trans woman. And even that I'm wrestling with. I really am. I don't even really understand what that is. You're a trans person. You're really a biological man who's got some gender confusion issues, and my heart goes out to you. But you're not a woman. You, Dylan Mulvaney, you put on a dress. You take a bunch of estrogen to grow something that approximates baby breasts. I don't know what those are. That's not what a woman is. You'll never be a woman. You can have the surgery. Dylan says they're getting bottom surgery. Go ahead, have your penis chopped off. You're still not a woman. Getting a surgeon to cut a hole down there doesn't make you a woman. You don't know the first thing about being a woman. You have no idea what the average woman has been through the course of her life, the challenges we have, the beauty of being a woman, the softness of being a woman, and you never will. You're never gonna have it. Doesn't matter how many surgeries, doesn't matter how many hormones, and I'm done engaging in this fiction, Paul. I'm done. I have empathy, I have compassion, but I am not willing to abandon truth in the name of sparing feelings.
You know, and isn't that the point? She's not willing to abandon the truth because of feelings. Because that's the point of it, isn't it? It's the point of it. When, you know, what sort of existence do we have if we don't have the truth, if we don't have reality? What sort of existence do we have? We've just got one of make-believe, don't we? We've got one that's a matrix type of existence, and with all these different layers, and depending on what sort of reality you want, you can change the tone and colour of your layer and just exist in that, in this strange alternative parallel universe. You look at that, Dylan Mulvaney. I mean, jumping up and down and doing his thing that he was just doing, I mean, I've got the greatest of compassion for the person. I really, really do. And you know, I wouldn't want anyone to harm him or give him a bash or anything like that. Not at all. I would stand in front of him and help protect him, that's for sure. I wouldn't want to see someone like that abused in any way. But let's be honest, he's a man playing dress up. He's a man playing dress up, and if you want to know how bad that can make kids that transition early and then become adults, just look up that poor boy Jazz. I am Jazz. That poor kid if he's a suicide candidate, it's probably him. And if I was his parents, I'd be watching him pretty, pretty closely, because he's distressed, he feels stuffed, he feels horrible, and he's in big trouble. So, you know, I really, really, we do need to pray for him, because I think he's on the danger list and needs to be watched and helped. Because he had his mother tell him the other day that he needed to keep himself lubricated and put something in there to keep his fake you know what working. So it's a terrible, terrible thing. All right then, let's leave all of that. Let's protect our kids. And just a reminder, the United Nations article, I'll dig that out. I want to study it a bit more before I talk on it. But I think you're going to be horrified, because that's what's coming to New Zealand very, very shortly. Minor attracted persons, it's just like, you know, I like blue, you like red, and that person likes children. It's the same thing, isn't it? Not on your life, it is. All right, let's go over here. Now, I want to talk about this before we say goodnight. I'll tell you what I will do is I'll bring this article up. We got complacent police association president on parliament protest. Now, this is the guy here, Chris Cahill, to his credit, came out and said that the parliamentarians, the MPs, should have gone out and paid respects and spoken to and the crowd and with the leaders, and they should have done the right thing, but they didn't. But the police got complacent over the need for more special equipment in the country, Police Association President Chris Cahill says. It comes after the findings of an independent review into the police's handling of the parliament occupation. Speaking to Breakfast this morning, Cahill said Aotearoa hadn't seen a protest on the scale since the Springbok tour of 81. We got complacent, would be the right word. I mean, even across the country, we've heard a lot of staff say we don't get public order police training, even for minor protests, mass crowd situations and things like that. Well, you get team policing, but it's not, still not that, I guess. It's a core part of policing that needs to be prepared for, and that's a recommendation in the report, and one that we'll be following up. That is their equipment made available, but also ongoing training at the right level. Cahill also said there needs to be more expertise around planning for significant events like the parliament protest. All right, okay, right. So we're going to have to agree to disagree on some of those points he's making, because some of it just doesn't make sense. But I guess the big problem that we have, though, is that they're saying that they need more training. But who are they seeking training from? Let's not forget this little peachy article here. Police Minister Ginny Anderson makes expectations clear after Hong Kong police visit New Zealand, speaking with Kiwi cops about combating riots. This is the same police force. They're not called a police service, they're called a police force, right? That have been criticized for their torture, violence, and overreaction to people protesting. Now, you read all of this here, you read all of this article and other ones connected to it, you're going to find that that there are huge amounts of international concern about the Hong Kong police force. Why? Because they have been listed as being an agency that uses torture. They've used excessive violence and force against protesting Chinese or Hong Kong Chinese, and they're well known for it. They're well known for it. So is that who our police are gonna learn from? Is that really how it's gonna be? Well, I'm just trying to load something in here. Doesn't look like I'm gonna be able to. I might be able to get this one. All right, let's have a look at this. I'm going to play this. It's something I'm not proud of playing, but I'm going to go into this in 1 second, because the way that the police handle this is not good. It's not good at all. And I just want to find this article. I didn't expect that I'd want to go into these into these particular, here we go, let's go there. I didn't expect to want to go into some of these, but I'm going to because I think we kind of need to. Let's see where this has gone. It's not going to let me in there. Let's try back there. But anyway, in the meantime, let's have a look at this, because you're going to see the imagery, and this is important stuff here. This is footage here. I'm going to make that bigger. This is footage here of an elderly man getting punched in his head and knocked out. Bang. Watch this. And down he goes. Luckily, he had a delayed reaction. Look. Now, that turned out to be a man in his late 70s. Let me play that again. There you go. Bang. Now, when I was training at police college, they said you're not meant to hit people in the head. What did that guy just do then? Here's another look. Look at this. Bang. Twice. Bang. Down he goes. There he is again. One. Two. He had a left and a right. There he goes. So, I'm sorry. That's assault in my book. That's assault. There's no justification for that. Was he using violence against them? Didn't look like it to me. Didn't look like it to me at all. Now, I understand, again, I want to say I completely understand what it's like to feel that type of pressure. I understand how some of those police would have been frightened. I totally get it, right? I totally get it, and I understand it, and I respect it. But there are bullies in the police, just like there is in rugby teams, right? We all know that. And there were people in the police that I knew that weren't going to be good people at all to be policemen. I knew that. And I thought to myself, my gosh, you know, we were out one night after being in duty in Wellington City, and we went out for a few drinks, and one of our guys that was with us was just intent in trying to find a fight with somebody while we were out drinking so he could arrest them. So have a look at this. Let's have a look, eh? And I just want to point out, I've got a couple of dear friends left in the police, and I've got great respect for them. Have a look at this. There he goes. Looks like he could be a sergeant. And they're pulling people out. And then what else happens? This lady here. Look at this. Look at this. Pull her out by her hair. And these women, if you can call them that, at least a good man comes along to cover her. She's got a G-string on, and these people, these police. Look, that man, that cop there that's come to put his knee on her, on the back of her head, or on her back, top of her shoulders, he had no business being there. He should have totally just left it to the females. So, I'm sorry, I cannot accept that as behavior that's appropriate. You know, I really don't believe there's any justification for that. And then, of course, it talks about, in these whole bunch of articles, it talks about a chaotic day in Wellington, a distraction team equipped with safety goggles and gardening gloves. Talks about all these things that don't mean anything. Then it says, you know, officers sent to quell Parliament protests with gardening gloves and borrowed gear. You know, it's a tough and dirty job. I get it. It's dirty. It's horrible. God spared me from going through all of that, I guess. But, you know, they didn't help themselves. This didn't need to go like that. And I'm very, very passionate about it. But here's the report. The Prime Minister says that the police complaints, Independent Police Complaints Authority, says there wasn't undue pressure to end the parliament occupation. I think he's a liar. I do. I don't believe him. I'm sorry. I don't believe him. Because Ardern was saying, get rid of them. It's got to go. It's got to end. Go home. You know, the Russians are telling you to protest. This doesn't feel like New Zealand. Americans and Russians and foreign people are telling New Zealanders to protest on the parliament lawn. It's not normal. It's not New Zealand. No, it's not normal. It's not New Zealand. Normally, it's New Zealanders that are harmed, hurt, afraid, distressed, angry because they've lost everything. While they're getting their money, while they're getting the free chauffeur-driven trips and free flights, and while they didn't need to get vaccine mandated, no parliamentarian, did you know that? Did you know that not one New Zealand parliamentarian was mandated? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that is the God's oath truth. Let's see what he has to say here.
I found that there was no improper political pressure exerted on the police commissioner. There's been an independent report now that's verified that. The speaker, that was ultimately a meeting of the speaker. There were some ministers who were in the room at the time, but it was ultimately the speaker's instigation, that meeting. He is the occupier of parliament. So
that's the excuse. You got Trevor Mallard, former Labour MP, who's made the speaker of the house, and he's taken the heat. And he took the heat, and he got a cosy job in Ireland for his reward.
The legal occupier, or was the legal occupier of Parliament. So it's appropriate, if you've got someone setting up camp on your front lawn, it's appropriate for the person concerned, or the entity concerned, to be communicating with the police about that.
All right. So there's his get out of jail ticket, literally. That's the get out of jail ticket that he was looking for. And isn't this funny, folks? Isn't this funny? Look at the irony of this article here. Apology for a protest arrest 12 years ago. Look at this old boy. They must wish articles just go away, but once they're in the media, I guess they never do. Apology for protest arrest 12 years ago. Look, and there was a violent protest, and guess who was at it? Yes, Chris Hipkins. And Chris Hipkins, what does he say? Among them, the protesters were Labour MP Chris Hipkins and Liam Hopkins, who said the apologies were crucial in reaching a settlement. Listen what he says. The key thing in this stalemate was the apology. It's not really about the money. It's about the symbolic apology that says I shouldn't have been arrested for doing nothing for more than protesting. You hypocrite, you insane, gaslighting, cancel culture, communist. Because that makes me so blinking angry to see that, folks. Because that same person who said that is standing back watching the New Zealand government, through the judiciary, through the police, persecute dozens of New Zealanders for protesting and hurting me and my whānau in the process, and offering to put me into jail for 5 months, reduced down to 4 months jail. Lord, help me with my speech tonight, Father. Because you know what? It doesn't it just make you see red? Doesn't it? That same man who can't tell you what a woman is the Prime Minister of New Zealand. Isn't it just, honestly, isn't it just a travesty? True, true travesty. It is, isn't it? It is. And, you know, you talk about all these things like, you know, why would New Zealanders want to stay here? You know, I mean, there are so many other articles I wanted to cover tonight with you, but we've literally ran out of time. And it's, who would want to stay in a country like this? And this thing with people leaving for Australia and overseas, can you really blame them? Can you really blame them? I really don't think we can we? You know, it's just so, so very, very clear that New Zealand is hell at the moment. I really, and I take no thrill out of saying that. I'm horrified. I really am. I'm horrified that I'm saying something like this about our country. It's heartbreaking. It truly is. And I'm not happy about saying something like that about our country. But anyway, let me share this final article with you before, and I'll pick up some of these articles that I'm missing tonight, tomorrow night. But I'm glad I've taken the time to speak through these issues that I have tonight, because they're important. They're important. Newsable, the relocation of the world's population and what it will mean for Aotearoa. Let's have a listen to this. Boy, I tell you what. India is poised to overtake China as the world's most populous country. The first time this has happened since the United Nations began collecting population data. Blah, blah, blah. And while this might be the most eye-catching demographic shift, projections of different countries' populations decades into the future paint a picture of a completely reshaped world just a few decades down the line. Now, this is what George Soros wants, by the way. Fertility rates in wealthier first world countries like Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand are lagging well behind the replacement fertility rates. And in fact, last year, Japan had more deaths than they had live births. Incredible. New Zealand's fertility rate currently stands at 1.61 births per female, an enormous drop from 1960 when it stood at 4.24. Meanwhile, in India and sub-Saharan Africa, birth rates are skyrocketing, right? So basically, what can we expect? Well, you know, look at this. Japan's population dropped by over 400,000 last year. It's a lot of people. And so if you extrapolate that across the planet with suddenly all these people dying out of nowhere, you know, or young people dropping dead out of nowhere, all cause mortality exploding through the roof over the last, 18 months? But what is it about the last 18 months that makes it like that? What is it? What is so special about the last 18 months that would make it so that suddenly there is a huge drop in the birth rates, live births around the world, and, you know, people dying and populations declining and all these things? What do you think it could be? I don't know, but I do know, and you know as well, so what can you say? What can you say? Well, I can say this. I had a warning on my Facebook page when I went to it late last night. And so, you know, it's a free country, isn't it? Should be allowed to say anything, shouldn't you? Well, it's not a free country. Anyway, so don't forget, guys, we are heading fast to 10,000 signatures here. We're at 8,325. Please, please, please help us get this message out here, because we want to, you know, like I was saying on the Dale Big Tree interview, I don't want to be disrespectful to anyone in the judiciary. Not at all. Not at all. I've got great respect for them, and I believe that there are some really good people in there. I do. Just like there's good people in the police, good people in the Army, Navy, Air Force, teachers, doctors, medical, you know, whatever, librarians, and there's not so good people in any of those sectors. But this sentence that we have been given of jail, I mean, the more I study it, look, I'm not a dumb person, I'm not a silly person, and I'm not so blind that I can't look at my situation from an objective point of view. No, I don't want to go to jail and leave my beautiful family for a few months. No, I don't want to do that, especially when I don't deserve it. And if I had done something wrong, I'd be the first to admit it so that I can clear my conscience between God and myself and men, so I can get it over and done with. I'd be going, right, okay, let's get this over and done with, let's go. But no, that it's indecent what this is. When we see abusers of our children, murderers, manslaughter people involved in robberies, burglaries, drive-by shootings, receiving home detention, I'm sorry, I can't swallow this. I cannot swallow it, and it's indecent and it's wrong. So we need to send a clear message to the government, and we want to be able to take this message with us to our appeal court and let them know that New Zealand is watching this closely. The world is watching this closely, and we are going to be judged by it. They will be judged by it. And I don't want to see my friend Vinny Eastwood, who's just had a beautiful little baby boy, Alfie, and he's a dear little boy. I don't want to see him without his daddy for a few months, not on your life. Just to finish, folks, if you would like to support me in the work that I do, I'd be very, very grateful. This is the way to do it. Please support me and, you know, buy a t-shirt. Sign up to the riveroflies.co.nz on our blog. Support our sponsors, please. This is not an easy thing to be doing. These legal fees that I'm involved with are just crippling. And, you know, and idiots think that I did all this for fame and notoriety and money. What? My word, I tell you, it's a strange world we live in, and I'm glad you're in it. All right, family, I'm going to leave it at that for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in for your Sunday roast. I've got a whole bunch more to cover tomorrow night to go on top of tomorrow night's article list, and I'll cover that tomorrow night back to the usual time at 7:30. Tonight would have been normally at 6 o'clock, but I got late into Auckland and late into the hotel, so please forgive me for having a strange time tonight. I'll be back to normal next week. Again, please don't forget that this coming Thursday, it will be well worth you coming. We've got the Magic Dicol Health and Your Wellbeing Show. Please, please, please come along and support this thing. You won't be disappointed. It'll be well worth coming to. And the other thing as well, as I want to point out, is come and learn more. I'm waiting for it to load here. Oh, it'd be nice if it did load. Where is it gone? Let's see if we can get it loaded here. Okay, it's going to play hardball. It's not. There we go. Yeah, alrighty. Now, we were talking about this last week, and it's a photonic shield. My kids have got theirs. I've got my machine. We want you to get these and be protected, whānau. It's, you know, we are surrounded by EMF. We are absolutely drenched in it. So let's get protection for our children, for ourselves, for our household and family. And these guys are the guys to work with. So I'm going to be able to get something sorted very, very shortly so that you can get your hands on it. And I'll let you know. Meanwhile, folks, thanks so much again for tuning in. Protect your babies. Protect your kids. Look at what they're looking at. Don't let them... If you've got Nickelodeon and Disney, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Get something else. Find something else for them to look at and to watch or read. But don't let these grooming platforms, these pedophile platforms, get their hooks into your children. Protect them. To all you New Zealanders that are wondering about New Zealand, yes, New Zealand has lost its shine for me. I don't enjoy saying that. It hurts my heart to say that. Maybe Australia is an answer for a period of time, because I think New Zealand has lost its way, it's lost its heart. And if they go to crucify me and Vinny and Uncle Raz for trespassing down in Wellington and people like him, then New Zealand is no place to be if you want to be free. And that's really the key point. Yes, it's a place where people are struggling for money, to buy food, to afford food, and it's a big struggle for everyone. I understand that. But, you know, that's completely almost a secondary thing, because like health, if you don't have freedom, you have nothing at all. And again, what's coming down the pipeline is coming out at a rapid pace at us. And to deal with it, we all need to have God. There's no way around it. We need the Lord. We need to seek him while he can be found. The answers to everything that we're going through is contained within this beautiful King James Bible. And the King James Bible is the last Protestant Bible left in the world. Probably the only other one would be the Waldensian Bible and the Macedonian Bible. But even these are new revised Armenian Bible. It's gone, apparently. It's no good. So the King James Bible, get rid of your ASV, your RSV, your Good News Bibles, your Good Hope Bibles, your NIV Bibles. Throw them out. Get your King James Bible and learn what was meant to be said in the right way. Because in 1 John chapter 5, verse 7, it says this: there are three that bear witness in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Ghost. And these three are one. And that's so straight, isn't it? And yet in all the modern Bibles, that is taken out of. That verse, 1 John chapter 5, verse 7, has mostly been eradicated, removed from all modern Bibles. Why is that? Why is that? Because it tells you that Jesus is God, and they want to get rid of that at all costs. But anyway, family, I'm going to leave it at that. God bless. Please keep the peace in your spirit. You're all in my prayers, and God willing, I will see you tomorrow at 7:30. Good night, everybody, and Paul Marty, yeah.